T.J. Otzelberger has got to be proud of his team, picked to finish seventh in the league. They'll likely be a two seed in the NCAA tournament. For the fifth time in the last 10 years, the Cyclones are the champs.
Iowa State winning Big 12 tournament. That nets them a number two seed in NCAA tournament. Welcome to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Big 12 tournament championship, a blowout. Iowa State knocking off Houston 69-41 on Saturday. Iowa State 27-7, Houston 30-4. Houston is a one seed. KU's in the tournament. Eight Big 12 teams made it to the Big Dance. Two that, well, really, one was on the bubble and another believed they were on a bubble that they really weren't on. So I enjoyed watching. I had a long diatribe on this whole thing, Dusty, while you were gone, about the bubble. And we'll talk more about it. I'd like to get your thoughts on it as well. But I used the analogy. It was kind of like this. K-State fans that I talked to, including yourself, the last few weeks, have said, listen, we're not good enough to be in the tournament. We're not going to get in the tournament. We have to do something special to get in. There was no hope they're going to make the tournament, basically. All of a sudden, these statistical nerd guys start throwing out numbers with net rankings and such a quad one, whatever, quad two, quad three, quad four, start to state the case that K-State should be on the bubble or should be in the tournament. All of a sudden, those same people that really were like, listen, I believe, I have my eyes, K-State's not probably good enough to be in the tournament. They hadn't put it together consistently. They're 19-14, blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden, wait a minute. We're getting the shaft if we don't get in this tournament. Then you ask those same people, well, did the numbers that you looked at that helped your argument of getting in, did those numbers mention that you lost two of the last three, you lost four of your last, six of your last 10, four of your last six, I think it is. You didn't have 20 wins. You were under 500 in the conference. You didn't have any good non-conference wins. You didn't have any real, true, great road wins entire year. Your three marquee wins were all at home. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't think we'd probably be in the tournament. I just thought it's interesting how it's politics 101 is what it is. Every bubble team puts out the notes that help their agenda to get in the tournament and conveniently leave out the skeletons in their closet, which is what politicians do. And so I had some fun with this last week, and I joked about there were K-State fans that were getting all riled up comparing themselves to Oklahoma. And I'm like, you shouldn't be comparing yourself to Oklahoma because all these bubbles that bracketology has, there's many teams between you and Oklahoma. You need to worry about the last team in, like Texas A&M, according to Joe Lunardi. And then I said on this show, I compared Oklahoma and K-State's resume, and I said, honestly, ladies and gentlemen, we're arguing the wrong things here. People are arguing K-State and Oklahoma should be in the tournament. I can give you proof they should both not be in the tournament. And what do you know? Today, they both are not in the tournament. So, just want to throw that one out there. I think the tournament is fine. And as I said before, oh my gosh, all these teams got the shaft. This is a 24-hour news cycle. As soon as the tournament starts tomorrow night, nobody's going to care anymore about the bubble teams who didn't get in, except the specific fan bases of those schools. Mm-hmm. The tournament will move on. It'll be just fine without these schools that didn't get in. And, oh, well, we need to expand the tournament. We need to expand it another round. We need 96. We'll still be arguing about who's number 97, who should be ahead of number 95 and 96. The bubble will always move. The only way you avoid it is you expand it to everybody gets to play, just like you have in State High School Activity Association. Everybody gets a shot, no matter if you're 0-20, get a shot. That's the only way you're going to solve the whole bubble equation. And in this case, it's not like the college football playoff where, you know, Florida State really did get the shaft. You know, Florida State was undefeated, okay? K-State had 14 losses. Oklahoma lost six of their last 10 and four of their last five. I mean, neither team was setting the world on fire going into the tournament. Well, this team's better than Michigan State. Well, you should have done more. I mean, you shouldn't be on the bubble. Don't put yourself in that situation. So, love to see what you think about that.
Right now?
No.
Okay. I was going to say, no, I figured that's coming everything. Later when
yep.
we talk about
the tournament. Tease people. Yeah. I wanted to tease people all that. So, well played. You're fresh. You're ready to go. after your trip. We're going to talk NCAA All-League Wrestling coming up. We will talk about the NCAA tournament. Kansas is in under the four seed. We'll talk about their seed. We will tell you why UConn will not win the national championship this year, even though all the pundits, for the most part, are picking them to win. And that means you should run like hell away from picking UConn in your bracket. When the national talking heads all agree, that's when you should run. You should not pick UConn. I'll explain another reason why you shouldn't later. We'll go through the bubble numbers. And there are teams that did not make the NCAA tournament, including Oklahoma, that are now too good to play in the NIT, have declined to play. Tom Crean had some very interesting thoughts about that, which applies to his former team that he used to coach in Indiana. And we'll get Dusty's opinion, my opinion on that as well. K-State women have reason to rejoice as they will host the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. So that's fantastic. And what else we got here? Royal spring training. And there have been some rumors about Legarius Sneed maybe close to getting traded. We'll cover that in a moment. Before we get into the show, I want to share this little nugget. Maybe people can enjoy this. If you went to college, if you remember college, you may appreciate this little one. So, yesterday, Dusty, was St. Patrick's Day.
Yes.
And so my 10-year-old knows all about the pinching if you're not wearing green. I hardly have any green in my closet. I wasn't wearing green. He pinched me. I looked at him. He wasn't wearing green. I pinched him right back. Yes, it is child abuse. And he pulls up his pant leg and had some kind of like Band-Aid or sticker that had barely any green that he taped, scotch taped to his sock. Like, I can't see it. You're vulnerable. Sorry, buddy. It's got to be visible. So, like, people say, oh, I'm wearing green in my underwear. Are you going to pull your pants down and show me? I don't think so. If he is invisible, you're not wearing green, even though technically you might be wearing green. So my wife was in the kitchen working on something, and my youngest, who's 10, who's a fourth grader, he is sitting on the bar stool there at the countertop, and I'm sitting at the dinner table. And yesterday's a Sunday, which is not the greatest day for St. Patrick's Day. My wife and I were out of town for part of Saturday. And Sunday, yesterday, she had some green dye, and so we had a green beer to celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Mm-hmm.
I said, man... I tell you, when I was in college, I say this out loud, my 10-year-old's right there sitting there, and my wife is listening. Sometimes she doesn't listen to me at all, but she was listening this time. And I said, you know, St. Patty's Day was my favorite holiday and favorite day when I was in college. And my wife looked at me and kind of smiled, and my 10-year-old goes, yeah, because you got to pinch a lot of people, right? Yes, son, that's exactly why I enjoyed St. Patty's Day. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, as I looked my wife and she started bursting out laughing. I said, son, you're absolutely right. That was the highlight every year in college, was so I could pinch the you-know-what out of people. Absolutely. Didn't share with him what I really meant by that comment, which was going out, having a great time with my buddies, my friends, so forth and so on. St. Patty's Day, down at Pittsburgh, Kansas. I went to school my last 2 years at Pittsburgh State. That's where I graduated. I'm a grill, if you don't know that. And I absolutely love St. Patty's Day. We had some Irish pubs there in Pittsburgh. McCarthy's was the main place we go to, which we were on a trip recently, and we went down to a couple years ago, and we stopped in Pittsburgh, and I actually went in there by myself, because it wasn't appropriate for the kiddos to go in there, to McCarthy's like 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekday, talked to the guy that was running the place, and I was like, man, this brings back memories. And I saw certain things on the wall that were there when I was there back in college a long time ago. So St. Patty's Day to me was always a blast and always fun. And now I'm 48, and yesterday we had, we made our own green beer. My wife and I had a green beer. And I'm not wanting to say that my wife's boring or my family's boring, but didn't have nearly as much fun yesterday as I did back in college on St. Patty's Day. And obviously, the reason I didn't have so much fun was I wasn't able to go around and pinch people, like my 10-year-old said. You know, and I'm like, oh, yeah, well, of course that's why I had so much fun on St. Patty's Day. Did you have fun on your trip?
Absolutely. It was a lot of driving, obviously, but, you know, that has its perks. I don't have to worry about what getting up at 5:30 in the morning to go catch a plane like they did. The rest of the people I was with all flew, and so the perks obviously of that are also going to get your own drinks, so you don't have to spend as much while you're on Broadway in Nashville, Tennessee. So there's a lot of positives to the driving part, but man, that trip back is a long one. But otherwise, throughout the whole thing, it was a lot of fun. I'd never been to Nashville, so took a day before the rest of the crew got there for the bachelor party. Uh-huh. And did some of the things I wanted to do myself in Nashville that I knew that they wouldn't want to do, which the first one was a trip to a cemetery to see Keith Whitley's grave. So people obviously that listen when I host Waterside Wake Up know I'm a Keith Whitley fan, so that was kind of a moving experience just to be there to kind of pay some respects. But you know, you do the other Nashville things, the Country Music Hall of Fame and the Ryman Grand Ole Opry was unreal. Mm-hmm. That experience, I posted about it on Facebook. You can read some of my thoughts about that, but it's just a different thing. And mm-hmm. you got to go probably on the right night to experience that.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. And so that was an amazing experience there. And then the rest of it was Broadway with the boys, and I'm too old for that.
You're the older, wiser guy that probably felt a lot better at the end
Absolutely.
Of the night than the next morning as they did, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I felt better after all that than they did, for sure. The
great part of that is you could have, if you were smart, you took some pictures, you've got some recording audio, and you got black.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
One of the advantages of being older.
One of the fun things, though, that we did is this would be the last part that would tie into the sports ticket, right? We went to the SEC tournament on Thursday for the early session of the quarterfinals, and Parker's idea was to have everybody get a certain shirt from each pick an SEC team and wear their shirt, right? So we all showed up to the SEC tournament with a different team on our shirt, and some of them were playing. Sam was a Gamecocks fan, so he actually got to see his team play. Mm-hmm. That he had picked out. Not a lot of them. I think he might have been the only one that actually had a shirt of the team that actually was playing that day that he mm-hmm. got to see. Arkansas had to beat Vanderbilt in overtime, or it would have been Sam and I battling against each other, Vanderbilt against South Carolina.
You had Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Lucky you.
I picked Vanderbilt in honor of Nate Bargatze, my favorite comedian. He's a Vanderbilt fan. So I was like, hey, anybody got Vanderbilt? I'm going to pick them. Okay. They're terrible.
Yes.
I didn't expect that I would get to watch them play since it was not the first day that we were going. But the funny thing about it is we went to an establishment, actually Blake Shelton's Old Red, and P was wearing a Tennessee shirt, so he requested this guy that was singing to play Rocky Top. And you could tell he didn't want to. And I didn't know what fan of what team he was, the guy that was performing there, but he finally did it and kind of did that. I don't want to do it. He was an Alabama fan. Uh-huh. And he was like, why are y'all together anyway? Like, he's wearing an Auburn shirt and he's wearing an Alabama shirt. Why are you even hanging out? You shouldn't even be seen with each other.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. But that was the fun part of it with the sports tie-in, right, was going. That first game between Mississippi State and LSU was some bad basketball. Uh-huh. But I watched that and I understood why everybody says the Big 12 is the best conference in the country while I was watching the SEC tournament on Thursday.
And
it was not good
and
basketball.
Mississippi State made the tournament.
Yeah, they did. Mm-hmm. And so did South Carolina, who, mm-hmm. you know, they beat Arkansas and ran away from it. And South Carolina was a decent team from mm-hmm. what I was looking at. But that mm-hmm. first game, we were all about to fall asleep. It was bad. But it was a cool experience to be in Bridgestone Arena and just to kind of see all that. And mm-hmm. Kentucky fans everywhere.
Oh, yeah. They travel
and
everywhere.
The tickets were going fast once Kentucky-Tennessee mm-hmm. both lost on the same day.
That was the worst possible scenario for the SEC tournament.
And then late, Alabama lost. And I'm like, all the people that had their fans mm-hmm. there for the semifinal, for the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
And like, boom, they're not even hanging around.
Auburn and
anymore.
Florida got some cheap tickets, probably.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, it was crazy. Like, we were kind of tracking, like, maybe we want to go to another game. And the prices were ridiculous for Friday.
Yeah.
But by the time those teams got beat out for the semis on Saturday, mm-hmm. it was like, oh. I mean, they went down to $40 for two games, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's exactly what happens in the Big 12 tournament. K-State and Iowa State get knocked out.
Yeah, it was wild. But, yeah, it was not probably a very interesting and packed crowd for the championship, I wouldn't
probably
imagine.
Probably not.
Good time, though. I would highly recommend going to Nashville if you've never been there. There are a lot of things to do and a lot of cool things to see. Mm-hmm. And stay away from Broadway at night. That's what I would recommend.
Stay away from Broadway?
Yeah. Just, I mean, if you want to go to the bars, have a good time. Find the ones that aren't going to be, I would say, if you're not
going for that for a bachelor or bachelorette party, do some research, find the ones that aren't going to be filled with that crowd, and you'll still have fun at night on Broadway.
Okay.
With all the bars that are the honky tonks and all that that are going on, but it's pretty extreme.
Okay.
If you're hanging out with that kind of crowd.
All right. I'll have to ask you more good about times, that off though. The air, though.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad you had a good trip. I'm taking tomorrow and Wednesday off. That's not a joke. I am taking Dusty. I'm just now telling Dusty this. I'm taking tomorrow and Wednesday off, a couple days off to do some things. I got to do my taxes. That's going to be fun tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I always have to take one day off to go itemize my taxes, go through all my information, this and that. And so, yeah, that's my vacation.
And, fun times.
And Wednesday, maybe I'll actually just have a chance to chill out while my wife goes to work and my kids are at school. My vacation is going to be sitting, maybe sleeping in is my vacation. That's how that day was going to go.
For sure.
Okay, All League Wrestling.
Yes, you can find the whole list at ncksports.com. The Bullet Trojans that are represented there on the All-League team are first-team selections. Ko Nielsen, 106 pounds. Brogan Monty at 113. Brody Boudreaux at 215. Second-team picks were Evan Blue at 120. Kellen Elam, 144. And Xander Elam at 150. And Zeta Purvis was on the girls' All-League team at 115 pounds. So you can, again, find the full look at the NCAA All-League Wrestling in ncksports.com for all the kids that were honored there for All-League. So I think wraps up what we have for All-League sports and teams for the winter sports season as we focus now and turn our attention and start putting schedules in on ncksports.com for spring.
We had our boys' basketball banquet last night and puts a final cap on a great season. It was 24-2, third place at state, so now it's kind of officially over. You know, after the banquet was really well done, and it was had a good time, had lots of highlights to watch or listen to, and listen to the coaches talk about the kids, and it was a nice turnout, and it was a good way to close out everything. The Big 12 men's basketball tournament, mentioned Iowa State won that. So now we go into the NCAA tournament. We're going to start with the teams that made it, and then we'll talk about the bubble and teams that didn't make it. Eight teams from the Big 12 heading to the Big Dance. KU, a 4 seed in the Midwest, 22-10 record. They'll face the 13-seed Samford, who is 29-5. Tip-off, 8:55 Thursday night on Z96.3 Lake from Salt Lake City. Kansas making their 34th straight NCAA tournament appearance. That's the longest active streak in tournament history. Kansas now 23 straight years, every year Bill Self's been a head coach, but 23 straight years Kansas has been a top 4 seed or higher. The next longest streak, Purdue and Baylor, 4. That's insane.
Yeah.
That is insane. And then I just love how people got to pee on everything. So then the response to that is, yeah, but how many titles did they win? Just 2 or 3. I'm like, just 2 or 3 more than your damn school has. I mean, what do you talk? I mean, well, they didn't they vacate one? Whatever. You want to take it away? Fine. Do 22 out of 23 seasons they've been a top 4 seed. It's still freaking impressive. Well, how many times did they get a 4 seed when they didn't deserve a 4 seed? Honestly, go back and look. Not very often.
Probably.
Because they were a 1 and 2 most of the time.
Yeah, it's like, that doesn't even make sense.
People that just are, you know, think they're smart, but dumber than they realize. That's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah.
And you just got to ignore those people. But anyway, sure. That's pretty impressive. And KU by far has the longest streak of getting a top 4 seed in NCAA tournament history. During this whole streak, you know, Duke's not made the tournament. Kentucky lost to Robert Morris first round of an NIT tournament. Carolina was a number 1 preseason last year, didn't even make the tournament. Kansas doesn't not only make the tournament, they don't get in as an 8 or a 9 or a bubble team. They're a top 4 seed. And this is a bad year for Kansas, and they're a 4 seed. Texas is the number 7 seed out of the Big 12. They will be in the Midwest as well. They'll play Thursday against the winner of the 10-seed matchup between Virginia and Colorado State on Tuesday in Dayton. TCU has a 9-seed in the Midwest. They'll take on the 8-seed Utah State on Friday. Houston, number 1 seed, they're in the South against 16-seed Longwood on Friday. And guess what? If Houston wins, which they should, but you never know, 2 16s have beaten in ones, including last year, Fairleigh Dickinson over at Purdue. But this is ironic and hilarious all at the same time. Trev Alberts left Nebraska after in November saying this is the greatest athletic job in the country. I played the cut. It was pretty awesome to play. And he got and Texas A&M paid a $4 million buyout to get Trev Alberts to leave Nebraska, be their AD at Texas A&M. Trev Alberts just got his salary over doubled. It was doubled. $800,000 to $1.7 back in November. Said it was the greatest job on earth. And then 4 months later, he's out of there, or 5 months later. What's crazy is now Nebraska men's basketball has never won NCAA tournament game. Never. Ever. They are in as an 8 seed, and they will play
Texas
A&M in the first round of the NCAA tournament against their former athletic director's school now, Texas A&M. To add to this, do you know who the Nebraska women are playing in the first round of the NCAA tournament?
Are they playing A&M too?
They are playing Texas A&M as well.
The whole thing yet.
Nebraska women and men basketball teams are playing Texas A&M, who just took away their athletic director. You can't make this stuff up. Pretty crazy. Also in the South from the Big 12, Texas Tech, the 6th seed against upstart number 11 seed NC State, who won 5 games in 5 days and needed a little luck. My wife and I, we were in a bar. It was a tailgaters there in Topeka. It wasn't too far from where my mother-in-law lives, but we've never popped in there. We've never popped in there. We've driven by there 1,000 times. And so my wife and I, we were driving around. We didn't have the kids for once. We had one night free out of town. Hallelujah. So we didn't go bar hopping like you did for the bachelor party or anything like that. It wasn't that crazy. But we went to eat. We ate nice in Manhattan. Then we got to Peak, and I was like, you know, we could go out and have a drink or something. And so we went to one place and tried out. We'd like to try different places. So there was some little hole-in-the-wall brewery thing, but they closed at 10, which is kind of wild. Got there about 9:30, had a drink. And then we're like, well, you know, the Jeremiah Bullfrogs was a place you used to go to back in the day in Topeka. It's no longer open, I don't think. There's the Dutch Goose, which I don't believe that's even open anymore. They call it Glazed Goose. There's lots of bars nowadays, and things change hand over the years. And then I said, you know, what's the there's that sports bar and grill that I've never been to. We drive by it every time we go to your mom's house. We drive by it every single time. And she said, oh, that's Gators. I said, no, that doesn't sound right. She's like, no, I think it's Tailgaters. I'm like, nah, I don't think that sounds right. But she goes, well, just take this turn. It'll lead us right there. I'm like, oh, okay. So we go and we start to pull in. And I'm like, for the life of me, I don't know the name of this sports bar and grill. I think it's Tailgaters. Like, oh, no, that's not. I don't think that's it. Yep, it's Tailgaters. Yep. So as my wife says, once again, I'm right, and you're wrong, and that's so true. But what I got caught up is the bigger name on the building is Jewish Center. So that's what throws me off, and the Tailgaters is kind of smaller. Anyway, never been in there, and my mother-in-law's lived in Topeka for quite some time now. We went in. It's a huge place. I mean, really, lots of seating. Mm-hmm. And this is on Saturday night, and it's about 10:30, and it's kind of dead. There's not too many people in there, believe it or not. They're getting all prepared for Sunday. They're going to have bagpipers performing and everything and whatever. So they have the TVs on, and you got the Iowa State-Houston game, which is a blowout.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, this is Friday night because we came back Saturday. So it was a Friday night. It was Iowa State-Baylor. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And NC State is playing Virginia. Now, you know me, I'm a sports fan, right? Something fun happens or crazy happens, I react to it. I'm a fan, even though it isn't even my team's involved. So there's like two other tables with people sitting there that aren't really paying attention to the TVs. I'm like, dear God, it's a sports bar. Why don't you watch some TV? So I'm watching NC State take a horrible shot, and Virginia gets fouled, and they go to the line, and Virginia pulls everybody off the lane to shoot the 1-1. And the guy short arms the free throw. It hits the front iron. NC State gets the ball. They fire it ahead. No timeouts. They put up a prayer from the left wing. High arcer. And I'm like, oh, dear God, that's going in. And it banked in and almost spun out and went down and tied the game to force overtime. And I go, oh, my God! I was the only person that spoke in that entire bar at that time. My wife's like, dear God, who am I with? I'm like, come on, it was exciting. The guy made an unbelievable shot. I turn around, I'm like, who are these people in here? They're not even know what is going on. I startled 10 people that were in the bar. And it wasn't even my team, for crying out loud. I'm like, oh my gosh. Dude, if they don't make that shot, they're not in the tournament.
Yeah.
Instead, they made the shot. I'm like, dude, they're going to get rolled by Carolina by 30 tomorrow. That's what I told my wife. I'm like, great run. You're going to run out of gas. You're going up against North Carolina. They beat North Carolina. And it kicks in a 2-year contract extension for their head coach. It allows, let's see here. I want to pull this up. It also allows him to get a raise. I've got to find this. It's amazing what happened in some of these conference tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if I can find it. Did I retweet it or not? Maybe I didn't. Here we go. So, tournament week, Jeff Goodman put this out there. I thought it was pretty good.
This was one of the craziest days ever we've seen in college basketball on Saturday. NC State won its fifth game in 5 days and beat North Carolina to win the ACC tournament, punch its ticket, also kicking a two-year extension for Kevin Keats. Long Beach State head coach Dan Munson,
that's the one,
was fired 5 days before the Big West tournament began. They said, well, you can coach it out, and they're now in the tournament. Temple beat Florida Atlantic. Temple had a record of 12-19, advanced the AAC title game against UAB. Richard Pitino, that's Rick Pitino's son, entered the Mountain West tourney on the bubble, won 4 games in 4 days, and won the Mountain West to punch their ticket. Dana Altman had to answer retirement speculation just a week ago. Altman's Oregon Ducks ran through the Pac-12 tournament and punched their ticket with a win over Colorado. Sorry, John Bowden. Brown beat favored Princeton, advanced the Ivy League title game against Yale. And so forth and so on. Iowa State won by 28 over Houston. Akron beat Kent State. I felt so sorry for that kid. Akron beat Kent State when Kent State took the lead, and the Kent State kid with 5 seconds to go thought they were behind one instead of up one, fouled on purpose. Akron went to the line at 2 free throws, got the automatic bid, and Kent State's not going to the tournament.
Man,
I felt horrible for him. So there's a lot of crazy, 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 crazy stuff that happened, and NC State will take on Texas Tech, and you're immediately going to say, well, they're out of gas, right? They got
That's
in. They're happy to
say.
Be there.
Yeah.
So we'll see who people pick on their racket. Iowa State's a 2 seed in the East. You could have made a case there. Could have been a 1 seed. They'll face number 15 seed South Dakota State on Thursday. BYU, the 6 seed in the East, facing number 11 Duquesne on Thursday. In the West, number 3 seed Baylor will face 14 Colgate on Friday. All right. Now, you want some help with your bracket? Let me try to help you. You ready? Oh, yeah, nobody's going to beat UConn, right? Nobody's going to beat UConn. I mean, UConn's they're unbeatable. They barely beat St. John's, who didn't make the tournament. But whatever. Keep feeding the narrative you want to feed. UConn is beatable. They don't have 5 NBA starters or anything like that. And I see teams with 5 NBA starters not make it to the Final Four. See Kansas. Not NBA starters, but NBA players. Back in 97, I believe it was. Lost to Arizona. So I'm looking at this bracket, and a lot of people are like, okay, well, UConn's going to win it. They're the team to beat. All the people on CBS at the end of their show last night, they all picked UConn to win it. Jay Wright picked them to win it. Clark Kellogg, Seth Davis. Seth Davis is more often wrong than ever right. Always picks 1,000 upsets. Well, I don't know why. To claim he picked one right, that's probably what he does. But here's a little nugget or two for your NCAA tournament bracket in regards to helping you pick a champion. And I would assume we're going to do a bracket contest again here at the radio station. So fill out your bracket. How do you want to?
I'll put it on Facebook and stuff too. But probably the easiest would be to email it to us or text it to me. I'll put all that info out there. Because the emails, nobody's going to be able to remember what it, I say right. On the email thing. Yeah. I'll probably just have it emailed to me to make it easier, I would guess. So So we'll just do it like that. And anything. You see me on social. If you have my Facebook, you can send me a screenshot or picture of your bracket on Facebook on a message.
Okay.
Any way you want to get it to me, you can get it to me.
All right. So UConn's a shoe-in to win the title, right? UConn won it all last year, if you didn't know. They would try to become the first repeat champion since Florida. Of course, the Chiefs became repeat champions in NFL, so maybe this year the repeat. I don't know. None of the last 6 national champions have made it to the Sweet 16 the following year. Forget winning it again or making the Final Four. They don't even make it to the second weekend. Kansas last year lost second round. They were defending champs. Now, if they had Bill Self, I'm pretty sure they would have got through that game. I think they would have lost UConn in the Sweet 16.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty amazing stuff. The last 6 national champions, okay, none of them have made it to the Sweet 16 the next year. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. Now, there's also, you might be sitting here going, well, what teams are really, really championship caliber teams? There's 68 teams in this bracket. We all know that there are teams in this thing that have no chance of winning it. Like, Wagner's probably not going to win the national championship. Just going to go out on a limb on that one. All right?
Probably not.
UAB? Probably not. Yale? Probably not. Duquesne? Probably not. Morehead State? Probably not. I could keep going. Anyway, since KenPom Analytics began in 2002, so that's a 21-year resume, okay? Since KenPom Analytics began in 2002, every national champion, except for one, has been top 25 in both offense and defensive efficiency. There are eight teams that fit that mold right now in the NCAA tournament. So there's 60 that you can go ahead and cross them off the list then. These are the eight teams, according to the last 21 years. There was one exception. Of course, if there's another exception, this blows this whole thing to smithereens. But as of now, there are only eight teams that fit that criteria of being a team you should put as your national champion on your bracket. Are you taking notes, ladies and gentlemen? You know, so you can win the $1 million bracket contest, wherever it is. And by the way, we're not giving away $1 million here at the radio station. Well, we could give you that fake $1 million bill that we got up on the ledge. And if you think you can cash it, be my guest and please let us videotape when you try that. Arizona, they're a 2 seed. Auburn, they're a 4 seed. Connecticut, obviously. Creighton, a 3 seed. Houston, a 1 seed. Marquette, a 2 seed. North Carolina, a 1 seed. Purdue, a 1 seed. So Purdue, North Carolina, Houston, and Connecticut, all the ones are on this list. 2 twos, a 3, and a 4. Kansas is not on this list. Okay. Now, I think if they've been healthy all year, they would be.
Yeah.
But they're not. And maybe that's the exception here. Maybe that's the exception because of injury, so forth and so on. When you look at the bracket, and we're going to talk about the bubble and K-State not making it here in a moment. You don't want to miss that stuff coming up. But you look at the bracket. Let's start in the East. UConn is your 1 seed. They could play Florida Atlantic in the second round. Florida Atlantic made the Final Four last year. I saw a lot of people ripping Florida Atlantic because there's no way it should be an 8 seed. Look at their resume and everything else. And I understand that. I also saw them win. I saw them beat Arizona this year. So I have no problem with them being in the tournament. Eights, maybe high. But you know what? For once, a small school got the benefit of a name.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no problem with Florida Atlantic being 8. San Diego State's the 5. Auburn's a 4. BYU's a 6. Illinois's a 3. They won the Big Ten tournament. Washington State's the 7. Iowa State's the 2. All right. What jumps out to you in the East? Like, what team do you like in the East other than UConn?
You know, I think if they play the right way, Iowa State is a team that could carry that over to the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I do like them. And I don't know. I'm looking at BYU to maybe make it to the Sweet 16. I don't really have a like a big upset type thing happening in this bracket. I got this Drake over Washington State, but I don't have like a low-seeded team making a deep run into the Elite Eight or Final Four.
I think Auburn's a team that definitely
they,
could
yeah,
make
they
a
could,
run.
Yeah.
You know, I know UConn's on that side in the Sweet 16. In the West, North Carolina's the 1 seed. Alabama's the 4. St. Mary's the 5. Clemson's the 6. Baylor's the 3. Dayton's the 7, and they're way over-seeded. And Arizona's a 2. Who do you like in that region?
This one, this could go a lot of different ways, I feel like. I actually took Baylor out to the Final Four here, but I think there's one of 4 or 5 different teams that could make the Final Four in this bracket. And so, I don't know. I'm not bought in on Carolina making it all the way to the Final Four out of this bracket.
So, I mean, there's 3 teams. I think Carolina, Arizona, and Baylor. Alabama doesn't play defense, so I can't put them in that equation. In the South, Houston's the 1 seed. As we mentioned, Nebraska A&M, the 8-9 matchup. Nebraska wins would be the first ever tournament win, and they'll get Houston more than likely. James Madison against Wisconsin, I think that's a 12 over a 5 sitting there. And there's always a 12 that beats a 5, it seems like. Duke's the 4 seed. Texas Tech, the 6 seed. Kentucky, the 3. Florida's a 7. And Marquette's a 2. I think a lot of people are taking Houston all the way through this thing. And then there are people that like Kentucky, because there's always people that like Kentucky every year. Oh, they're dangerous. They're super talented. And they haven't won a lot of games the last few years in the tournament.
Who you like in the South, or who's a team that you're keeping an eye on that might be overlooked?
It's and interestingly enough, the team you said that might get beat out in the first round, I've got Wisconsin going to the Sweet 16.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe fighting just their style of play. I don't know if it's – I haven't watched a lot of Wisconsin this year, but they're kind of a team I'm looking at. But I, if Houston plays to the top of their game, they're a clear favorite, I think, in this bracket. I don't see a lot of teams that are going to give them a huge problem here.
What's interesting to me about the South bracket is a lot of people talking about Houston, a lot of people talking about Kentucky. You know, Marquette's gets a lot of run because they've been really good this year. And there's a team I can't believe that's being overlooked, and that's Duke.
Duke, yeah.
I mean, I'm sitting here, and I don't like Duke. I've hated Duke ever since the 80s. And hate's a strong word, but I do stand by that on this one. But I respect the program. And Duke is a team this year at times has looked terrific. At times they've not looked so good. And I look at their draw, and I say to myself, James Madison's going to be Wisconsin. That's my opinion. And Duke could get Vermont and James Madison before they even made the Sweet 16. That's a pretty good draw for Duke, if that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So Duke is my sleeper out of the South as a four. In the Midwest, Purdue's the one seed. Will they lose again to a 16? Wouldn't that be something? Matt Painter might get fired on the spot. TCU's a 9. I think that's an interesting game. If Purdue has to play TCU in the second round, I think that's going to be an interesting game. Gonzaga is a 5. McNeese is a scary team. KU's a 4 against Samford. South Carolina's a 6, Creighton's a 3, Texas is a 7, and Tennessee is a 2. Tennessee got bounced early in the SEC tournament, as did Kentucky. Whoa. You know, to me, the Midwest, you know, you sit here and everybody's talking about Purdue, but, you just can't, until Purdue actually makes the Final Four, I can't put them there.
I don't have them there.
And I can't put Kansas in the Final Four.
No, this year.
Not this year. Although I wouldn't be stunned if some things fall their way. You know, Oregon's playing good ball right now, so South Carolina. Creighton is a team that was just so close to making the Final Four for the first time ever last year. That's kind of who I'll be pulling for in that bottom half of the bracket. And then there's Texas and there's Tennessee, and Rick Barnes could go up against his former team Texas in the second round of the tournament, which means it probably won't happen. And St. Peter's is sitting there. Last time they made it, you know what they did. The Elite Eight, and they knocked off Kentucky in the first round. And I believe they were a 15 that year when they beat Kentucky. And now Tennessee gets to play them, another SEC school. So who's your chic pick in the Midwest, or who's a team you're looking at that people might not be looking
at? Well, I've got Tennessee going to the Final Four, but this is where I kind of went off on a double-digit seed to the Sweet 16. I've got McNeese in the Sweet 16.
Wow, yeah, I could see that.
I could see that. So that's kind of what would be crazy to some about this bracket that I've got. I'm definitely looking at Creighton there, obviously, and going to keep track of them. And I wouldn't – listen, I said the basketball that I watched was bad on Thursday, but South Carolina's actually got a fairly decent team. Mm-hmm. And I think they could beat Creighton and make it to the Sweet 16, and then maybe you got an all-SEC matchup with South Carolina and Tennessee, and then you never know how something like that would go since they know each other, right?
Right.
And so, I wouldn't overlook South Carolina, but – you know, they are playing Oregon in the first round, like you said, who's hot right now, too. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see that. But, yeah, I got Tennessee coming out of it, but McNeese to the Sweet 16.
Play-in games, Howard against Wagner, Virginia versus Colorado State. Some people say Virginia shouldn't be in. Montana State against Grambling State, and Boise State against Colorado in a play-in game. Boise State, a lot of people are shocked that they were in a play-in game, as was Boise State. The Mountain West did not get much love. They got bad seeding and didn't get rewarded for playing some tough non-con, and that's the biggest problem with this tournament every year. And it's the same way with college football playoff, is that the goalposts are always moving. It's always moving. Like, they're all caught up in net ranking, but there's ways to totally manipulate net ranking. We've seen how that's been done. KenPom would be a little bit more accurate. And so you can complain until the cows come home about who should be in, who shouldn't be on the bubble, but the best teams are in the tournament, okay? The best teams are in the tournament. All the bubble teams have warts. Speaking of the bubble, we'll talk about that, and we'll hear from Tom Crean his opinion on teams electing to pass on the NIT after not making NCAA tournament and just quitting their season just like that.
Extended warranties on vehicles have become a very popular thing. You may have bought one. But what do you do to take advantage of the benefits when you need them? Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit works with most all warranty contracts, and we can be your advocate when you need repairs. Just bring us your car, your concerns, and a copy of the warranty contract, and we take care of the rest. Let our fast, friendly service help you get the most out of your extended warranty contract. Find Kiever Brothers Automotive just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at KieferBrothers.com.
All right, welcome back to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. So we talked about the eight Big 12 teams that are in Oklahoma and Kansas State. You know, K-State was on the very outside edge of the bubble, contrary to what K-State fans think. And Oklahoma was squarely on the bubble, or actually, like, one of the last four in, or they were going to avoid get a bye and not have to be in the play-in game. And then all the upsets took place. Mm-hmm. There were five conferences that stole bids, which absolutely just annihilated the bubble. And the teams that suffered the most from this, there's no question Oklahoma did, Seton Hall did, Indiana State did. That was the team I really wanted to see in there that I thought deserved to be in, Indiana State. They don't get the opportunities that Oklahoma, K-State, Seton Hall, Pittsburgh, St. John's, Providence get. And those are the other bubble teams. And so K-State doesn't make it in. No surprise to me at all. I know you're not surprised either, even though some people somehow can make this argument that they should have been in. But anyway, with these bubble teams, here's some of these bubble teams. Michigan State got in. I do think they were seated higher because of their name and Tom Izzo.
Absolutely.
I do believe that. Are they more worthy than somebody else? Once again, we're talking about a whole bunch of warts that every team has, and which team has the less ugly warts is what we're arguing here. We're splitting hairs. Colorado got in there in a play-in. Indiana State did not get in. Mississippi State got in. St. John's did not get in. Colorado State got in. Cincinnati did not. Florida Atlantic, they claimed they were a bubble. They were an 8 seed. Pittsburgh didn't get in. Villanova didn't get in. K-State beat Villanova. TCU is in. Texas A&M is in comfortably at a 9. Oklahoma's out. Utah out. Ohio State out. Northwestern. Did Northwestern make it?
Yeah.
Okay, they're in. Virginia's in. Providence is out. Kim English.
K-State beat Providence,
yes,
too.
They did in overtime. Oklahoma beat Providence by 21. Kim English, the head coach of Providence, used to play in Missouri, called the analytics BS. I'm not going to disagree necessarily. Seton Hall somehow isn't in. They had 13 wins in their conference in the Big East and had some good wins. They're not in. Butler's out. And K-State, was their net was 71. So K-State was really not close on some of these numbers. And then UNLV. So let's start with Kansas State. They will be in the NIT. They are choosing to play. Good for them. They will play Iowa. Iowa's 18-14. K-State 19-14. That'll be Tuesday at 8 o'clock in the first round in Iowa City of the NIT. I went through this the other day, but since Dusty is here, we'll at least touch upon it briefly. And that is that Jerome Tang, and I won't play the whole thing, he had a 3-minute kind of a rant after they lost to Iowa State about how they deserve to be in. And as I said on this show on Friday, I love Jerome Tang, and I know exactly what he's doing. He's no different than a politician, and that's what all these coaches are when they're in the bubble. You become a politician, and you stump for your team, because that's what you should do. You should back up your kids that fight so hard all year. You want them to have the opportunity, and so you point out all the positives. We have so many quad one wins. We don't have that many quad four losses. We got this ranking. We beat three top 10 teams. What you leave out is none of them are on the road. And it is interesting how, you know, I can only speak to K-State, and I can speak to maybe Oklahoma on the convenience of leaving things out of the discussion. So I'm looking, you know, at K-State. We talked about this. They lost to USC, okay? And USC's not in this tournament.
Mm-hmm.
They beat Bellarmine. Wow. Beat South Dakota State. Wow. Beat Providence. Didn't make the tournament. Lost to Miami by 8. Miami didn't make the tournament.
That game wasn't even that close.
No, Miami killed. Central Arkansas, wow, that's a big win. Whoop-de-doo. Oral Roberts, they won in overtime. They shouldn't have beat North Alabama. They won in overtime. Beat Villanova, who's not in the tournament, in overtime. Beat LSU on the road. And that's your only good road win, by the way, and your non-con, and they didn't make the tournament.
No.
Nebraska, you lost by 16. Nebraska, there was a chance to get a good win. Nebraska's in the tournament as an 8 seed. Beat Wichita State, beat Chicago State. Can you please help tell me what was the great non-con win that K-State got this year?
They don't have one.
They don't have one. Okay. So, clearly they have some amazing road wins, right? For K-State fans to argue they should be in the tournament. Their road games, they won at West Virginia. Is that a marquee win?
No.
No. I'm just going to go through the wins they had on the road. Notice the silence.
Yes, it takes a bit.
They lost at home to Oklahoma by 20, and K-State fans were telling me that they deserve to be in over Oklahoma. I said, for the love of God, Oklahoma beat you by 20 on your floor. Just stop. Oklahoma beat Providence by 21. You beat them by 3. They beat USC. You lost USC. Just stop. By the way, I'm still going.
A lot of times this season we said, hey, if they could get this road win, that'll help their resume. And still silence.
Holy cow. I didn't realize it was this bad.
It was very bad.
What was their record on the road in the Big 12?
I don't even. I've already suppressed the memory of it. No, I didn't. I haven't totally. Like
he's already moving on to football.
Listen, I have not done any of the research on this. I've not done any of the things.
K-State was 1-8.
They were bad on the road.
1-8.
Yeah.
Kansas State was 1-8 on the road.
They lost like 8 out of 9 games at one point.
K-State was 1-8 on the road in the Big 12. And Jerome Tang's talking about, well, we beat Iowa State, we beat KU at full strength, and we beat Baylor. And Baylor had no business winning, but you did. They were all at home. And the committee yesterday, the chair said, it's where you win these games that counts as well. And he said, when we're looking at bubble teams and we're kind of splitting hairs here, we're looking at what did you do on the road? K-State, out of that equation immediately. Immediately. Their only road win in the Big 12 was at West Virginia. But somehow, some way, K-State fan thinks they should be in this tournament. Well, we beat Iowa State. We beat Kansas. For the love of God, when you play 18 games in the toughest conference in America, you sure as hell might win a few of them. Like, Amanda, imagine if Indiana State got to play in this conference. Maybe they would have got a couple wins at home. I mean, Houston wasn't in a Big 12 this last year, were they? Well, what's Houston going to do in this conference? Houston went 6-3 on the road. They came right in this conference, no big deal.
Yeah.
And went undefeated at home. Okay, Oklahoma was 3-6 on the road, a little better, only 5-4 at home. Oklahoma, K-State were under 500 in their conference. Oklahoma barely got to 20 wins. K-State didn't get to 20 wins. K-State and Oklahoma, Oklahoma beat them head-to-head if you want to compare the two, but that really doesn't matter because they're both out. Tell me again why Oklahoma and K-State should be in. Oklahoma didn't have a quad two. All their losses were quad one. But they lost 12 games. They lost 4 of their last 5. They lost 6 of their last 10. K-State lost 2 of their last 3. They lost 6 of their last 10. And I keep hearing Jerome Tang say, well, we got 9 Big 12 wins. That should be enough. Well, you're adding one in the tournament. Did you mention you lost 11 if you add in the one you lost to Iowa State in the tournament? Once again, conveniently leaving out numbers and facts, which I understand. I'm not mad at Jerome Tang for doing it. It's the way you play the game. You don't mention that your net's not as good as it should be. You don't mention you did jack squat in the non-con. He talked about USC was way better at the beginning of the year, and Providence had a key player. And it's like, Coach Tang, everybody in America can use that excuse. Everybody in America can say, well, we played Miami when they ranked top 15. Yeah, lots of teams are ranked early in the year. And guess what? We find out they're not that great. And you got blown off, the doors got blown off of you against Miami. And that was a neutral site. So it is convenient. And then he throws in, well, Texas A&M has a quad four loss. We don't have any losses, no quad four losses. What he fails to mention is Texas A&M has 7 quad one wins, which is more than K-State. So see, it is, and I'm using Jerome Tang and K-State as an example. I'm not trying to pile on K-State for not making a tournament.
Well, this is where we're at. We're right here. They're 90 minutes away from us. That's why we're talking about K-State.
Right. That's the reason we're talking about K-State.
And using them as an example.
We're using them as an example. And we're using Oklahoma as an example. And I said it on Friday. The argument shouldn't be, is K-State in over Oklahoma? Or Oklahoma in over K-State? or K-State should be in. The question should be, how in the world is either one of them in? And you can say that about Kansas State. You can say that about Oklahoma. You can say that about Pittsburgh. You can say that about Providence. You can say that about St. John's. You can say that about Seton Hall. You can say that about Oklahoma. You can say that about Indiana State. And as I said on Friday, if all these teams are on the bubble, all of them were Power Six conference teams, except one, Indiana State.
Yeah.
And that's the one I said, I told everybody on the show on Friday, and I think you agree with me, you know what? It's simple. You put yourself on the bubble. It isn't the committee's fault that you're on the bubble. You're on the bubble because you lost too many games. You didn't win enough games. You didn't win enough good games. You had some really bad games. And you had all these opportunities. Kansas State had 33 opportunities, and they lost 14 of them. Okay? St. John's had 33 opportunities. They lost 13 of them. Providence had 34 opportunities. They lost 13 of them. Seton Hall had 32 opportunities. They lost 12 of them. Indiana State doesn't get the opportunity to get all the chances in the world like K-State to get a quad one win every single day. So when I said on Friday, you know what? All these teams have warts. All these teams, you could argue, don't deserve to be in. And why are we arguing about teams that are mediocre or average that should be in a tournament when this is supposed to be the best 68 teams? Well, my team's 67th best. Whoop-de-freaking-la-dee-da. You're not going to win the championship when you're a 67th best team. But what I did say is the one team out of that whole mix, and I said, listen, if K-State gets in, that's awesome. I said, I hope K-State gets in because we'll have more to talk about during this week, tournament week. It'd be great if K-State's in the tournament. I didn't think they would be, but it'd be great if they did. The team I really wanted in was the little guy, mm-hmm. Indiana State. Indiana State won the Missouri Valley Conference. Dusty, I know this is a pet peeve of Dusty's. They won the regular season championship. That's a whole from November to the early part of March. They were the best team in their conference. They had one bad game, lost to Drake, I believe it was, in the Missouri Valley in the conference tournament, and they are out. If Kansas State wins the Big 12 regular season title but loses in the Big 12 conference tournament, is K-State out?
Absolutely not.
Oh, of course not. Hell, K-State's almost in, and they're 8-10 in their conference.
Team that won the Big 12 didn't win the tournament and is still a number one seed.
Houston. Yes. So the team that was on the bubble that I really wish would have been in, and it sounds like they would have been if not for all these stealing bids.
Yeah.
But I would have rather seen Indiana State in over Virginia. It's like watching them is like watching paint dry. So Indiana State was the one that I think maybe has the biggest beef, that they had really great strong numbers in all the analytics, and they're left out. These others, you had all the chances in the world. I always love, we play in the best conference in America, we should get so many teams. You also didn't take advantage of winning as many games that you could have because you had way more opportunities than poor Indiana State.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting how we play this both ways to add to our narrative and our agenda. But for anybody that thinks that K-State should be in this tournament, well, first of all, you're wearing purple glasses. And if you're actually objective, and I said this the other day too, if Porter Mosier of Oklahoma and Jerome Tang of Kansas State and even Rick Pitino at St. John's, if they were on the committee, or if you just flat out gave them blind resumes, not knowing whether their team's in this blind resume pile or not, and if you would just spread them out, and you have them look and tell them, we got two spots available in the NCAA tournament. Here are six bubble teams. Pick the two resumes you think are best. I'd be willing to bet you that those coaches would pick resumes that weren't their own, if it's a blind resume.
Mm-hmm.
So it was politics. And did anybody politic better than somebody else to get in? I don't know. I don't really think so. And there's always going to be people that are going to whine and complain about this team didn't get in, this team didn't get in. All we're talking about is the 67th best team instead of the 68th. And when you're comparing your team to other teams that, like Michigan State, that's a silly argument in my opinion, and here's why. They're a 9 seed. What you should be doing, and this is what people do all the time, and they're so wrong in this argument, when your team doesn't get in, you're a bubble team and you didn't get in, your argument should immediately go to who's the last one that got in.
Mm-hmm.
That's the team you should compare yourself to. Quit worrying about Oklahoma if they're 8 slots ahead of you. Don't worry about Michigan State when they're a 9 seed or Florida Atlantic an 8 seed. You know what? You were nowhere close to them, clearly, according to the committee. Look at the pecking order and see who was the last team in. And it appears to be that Virginia was one of the last teams in. Colorado State was one of the last teams in. Colorado was one of the last teams in. Okay, those are the teams that you should compare K-State to if you're a K-State fan. Not Michigan State. But I see people I know complaining about Michigan State. Man, you are barking up the wrong tree there. And if they got in because of their name and their coach, well, you know what? They have established something over the years. I'm not saying that's the way they should be seated, but you know what? They've done a hell of a lot more than K-State and Oklahoma done in basketball over the years. So maybe they do get the benefit of the doubt. That's part of being a great program and being really good consistently. Okay? Does KU get a little bit better seed than some people think? Yeah, but they play a tough-ass schedule, and they actually have good non-con wins, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So it is convenient when it's a one-sided argument that you put in favor of yourself, but you don't know anything about these other teams other than, well, we're better than Michigan State. Yeah, but they're nowhere close to being the last team in. You weren't in. You should start at the very bottom, the 68th team that got into this tournament that didn't have an automatic bid, and that would be Virginia. It's the play-in games. I've got them right here. All right? It would be because Montana State, Grambling State, they automatically are in. So you got to complain about Colorado, Boise State, Colorado State, or Virginia. That's the four. That's the last four in, according to the committee. So K-State fans, are you better than Virginia? Are you better than Colorado State? Are you better than Boise State? Are you better than Colorado? You have four more losses than every one of those teams. You have four less wins than every one of those teams. All those teams have winning records in their conference. And I'm guessing all those teams at least won more than one road game in conference play. But we play in the toughest conference in America, Wade. Well, then put them all in, right? I mean, why the hell isn't Oklahoma State in? They all play in a tough conference. Teams. I mean, why isn't Oklahoma State in? They play in a tough conference. You know, West Virginia, I mean, they beat Kansas. Why aren't they in this tournament? There's no rule that says you have to have a winning record. There is no rule that says you have to have a winning record. Did you know that? There isn't.
There used to be,
yeah,
but
no. You win your conference tournament, you're 0-20, and you win a conference tournament, you're 3-20, you're in.
Yeah.
Okay? You don't have to have a winning record getting this tournament. You don't. Okay? West Virginia would have won 5 games in 5 days, they would have been in.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, where do you draw the line? What's the cut line? Well, this is the cut line. And by the way, not too long ago, we had 64 teams. We complained. Then we advanced it to 68. We complain. Now people go, well, this bubble is the strongest you ever had. We got to expand the field to 96. So then we're going to have a whole bunch of 17 and 16 Power 6 conference teams and 18 and 14 and 18 and 15 that are going to play each other to play into the tournament or be in a first round. You know where I can watch that? The NIT! And guess what? Iowa's 18 and 14, K-State 19 and 14. There you go. That's a perfect NIT matchup.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to give K-State credit. They're playing in the NIT. There are teams that did not make it that are not playing in the NIT. Rick Pitino. St. John's, 20-13. First year as a head coach. Weren't really expected to make the tournament for the season. Got hot late. They're not playing in NIT. And I don't sit there and say that they were absolutely scorned. I don't think they're the one that has a beef here. Oklahoma. Like I said Friday, I didn't think they should be in, and they're not. But they're too good to play in the NIT, I guess. Pittsburgh, not going to play in the NIT. Memphis, Wichita State beat them. Mm-hmm. Memphis has all the talent in the world, always underachieve under Penny Hardaway. 22-10, they're not playing in NIT. Ole Miss, 20-12. What makes them think their stuff don't stink? They're not playing in NIT. Indiana's 19-14. They're not playing in the NIT. Tom Crean, former Indiana head coach, who was at Marquette as well, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. He's on ESPN. He had some strong words about teams not playing in NIT.
There's no question about it. I would want to coach. I would want to develop my team. You've got bigger staffs than you've ever had. There's plenty of time for the portal. There's plenty of time to talk to recruits. There's plenty of time to negotiate NIL deals. There's not plenty of time to play. There's not plenty of time to get your players on the floor and give them a chance to get better. There's not plenty of time for guys to continue to play that may never get to play again. And that, to me, is absolutely ridiculous. It's each coach's choice. I get it. But if you take away a chance to play the games, to put your team on the floor, let them opt out. All right, the bowl season has it all the time. Let it happen. Who cares? Give your players and coaches a chance to keep coaching and playing, wow, and don't shortchange. If a guy doesn't want to play, go sit out. If a coach doesn't want to coach, go recruit. But there's got to be enough people to put five, six, seven people on the floor and go play. Makes absolutely zero sense to me.
Strong words from Tom Crean. Some people will come back and say, listen, Power Six teams and their fans don't care one iota about the NIT. Thus, it's all about winning a national championship, getting to the Final Four. So we're not going to play NIT. Nobody cares. You know, there's some teams that made some really good runs in the NCAA tournament after playing in NIT. Baylor was one of those so many years back. You know, Kansas State could easily not play in NIT because of that thinking. And I will say, I thought basketball players wanted to play basketball. And Tom Crean, I think, makes a couple interesting points. One in particular, you know, teams don't usually opt out of a bowl game in football.
Mm-hmm.
They have 25 players that might not play, but they still represent and play in the bowl game. And you might have a third string quarterback that now is your starter, but at least they play the game. And according to Porter Mosier and I think Rick Pitino said something about it was a team vote or this is what the team decided. You can't tell me that every single kid on that team doesn't want to play anymore basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand what Tom Crean's saying. It's like, listen, do the same in the bowl season. You know, if the kids want to play, let the kids play. Let's keep on coaching. If you don't want to coach, go recruit. If you don't want to play, sit out and opt out, just like the bowl season. I get it. And what this does, too, is it's obviously not good for the NIT. No doubt. And I know we're trying to determine who the 69th best team is now, right? That's always the joke. The one outside whatever the field is in the NCAA tournament. But there's another thing that's in play here. And the NCAA is a laughingstock of an organization. It has been for years. And the things that set up and are done are almost as dumb as the people in Washington, D.C. running our government. Sorry, that just threw it in there. The transfer portal began today. Why in the hell would you have the transfer portal open the day after the tournament selection show? Jeff Goodman has put it out there. By 8:30 this morning, there's already 30 players in the portal.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet there's 100 now.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
What's the rush? Why can't you say the portal opens the day after the national championship game, or the portal will open the day after the day before the Final Four, or the day after the regional finals, or for dear God, at least get through the first week of the tournament?
I would say, yeah, get through the first round,
the
first
day
two
after
rounds of the NIT,
the day after
tournament.
Or 2 days after your season ends, these kids are already bolting and getting in the portal. Why do we have to hurry this?
Yeah, it's like you're down to 32 teams instead of 64, 68 at the start. Let's get to the second week. You're down to 32.
Get through the first weekend.
Some of them teams that are knocked out of the tournament.
Well, after the first weekend, you'll be
out.
Actually, after the first weekend, you'll be out of 16.
Yeah, down to 16 after the weekend. So, you know, get those teams knocked out, and then they can get maybe a little jump start on going. But right now, it doesn't make any sense because – and that's probably why some teams – might say, no, I'm not going to play in the NIT because people are going to hit the portal.
That's exactly
and
what
so
I'm trying to say.
It's like, yeah, it's not the timing's not right at all. Like, get through the first weekend of both of these tournaments to where you're whittled down to where you've actually played games now. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, well, we got something going here. We're not going to leave now since we're still playing.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that aren't playing can be like, oh, well, season's over. I'm out of here. And I know that there's still a very, very large majority of the teams that are not playing basketball right now.
Right.
And then they can start that process and get going to a different place after their conference tournaments are over. But it's like, yeah, I don't know. That's timing-wise isn't where you want it to be.
No, it's not. And I think, you know, obviously if you're a kid thinking about transferring and going in the portal, or you think you're a mid-major kid that didn't make the tournament, but you're invited to the NIT – and you're like, dude, I think Kansas or K-State or Oklahoma or Texas will be interested in me, or Alabama. So I'm going to go in the portal. Am I playing NIT? Would I risk getting hurt if I'm transferring anyway and want to go to where I get more recognition or more accolades and get attention? And I mean, there's some really good players that are mid-major. I mean, Tyler Perry was a pretty good player for K-State this year. He played at North Texas. You know, Nick Timberlake didn't have a good year, but he was one of the top shooting guard transfers in the country out of Towson. Now, those guys, why are they going to play in the NIT if they can transfer immediately into the portal, put themselves in the portal immediately the day after the season ends or whatever, the day after the selection show is put together and the brackets come out? Why are we in such a gigantic hurry? Can't these kids have another month, let alone two, maybe 2 weeks, to sort out more of whether or not it's right for me to transfer portal or not? And if I have to wait 2 weeks to officially be in the portal, does that hurt anybody if nobody else can get in early? I just don't get it. I don't get it. And this, I think, is exactly what I was trying to do, and you said it for me. This is part of the reason why some of these teams aren't playing in the NIT, because they know they have probably a few of these kids that are key players that are not going to be, one, they might declare for the draft. Two, they might decide to go to the portal. Others may say, I'm going to go see if I can somehow find some NIL money and then be in the portal, or vice versa. And so thus, why would I play in the NIT?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm really happy that K-State is, because I thought there was a chance K-State wouldn't. I'm glad they are.
Yeah.
As a K-State fan, do you care about the NIT? Do you care that they're still playing? I would guess that it's not that big a deal to you. And that would back up these other people's comments towards Tom Crean that, yeah, Tom, you're on your soapbox. We get what you're saying. We agree with you. However, we can start on next season right now.
Yeah. There's a lot there. I want to go back and let people know where my headspace was on K-State, because I saw this thing on Twitter about Jerome Tang with this 3-minute speech about his team should be in the tournament, right? I've not listened to it. On February 17th, when Jameer Nelson Jr. made a 3-pointer that gave TCU a win in Manhattan, the season was over as far as the NCAA tournament was concerned for me. I said it right here on this show on February 19th, right? On that Monday after that game.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, well, there's still some things that can happen. And I know you're playing the other side of the coin of it, obviously.
Well, and the optimistic side.
And the optimistic side, yeah. But I was not even on the pessimistic side. I was on the realistic side.
Yes, I agree.
And so
the objective side.
Yeah, and it's like people you can be pessimistic and optimistic, but realistic is where you want to be, I think, in the middle of all these discussions, and not let your personal feelings get caught in the middle of it. And obviously, Jerome Tang doesn't have that luxury. He has to let his personal feelings get caught in the middle of it. He's the coach. He wants his team to get into the best situation possible. But I knew February 17th that this team was not making the tournament, that they lost to TCU at home. They'd been terrible on the road. And I misspoke earlier. They lost 7 out of 8 at one point, not 8 out of 9.
Okay. Wow.
Wait, I was one game off, but they had a stretch and TCU was part of that. And then that Monday night, they have an opportunity here to maybe make up for losing to TCU at home and go to Texas and get a win. And did they? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
They lost another game that night, and that was 7 out of 8 that they lost. That was the end of that 7 out of 8 stretch of losing.
Absolutely.
Now, they picked up wins at home. Good for them. You're supposed to win at home.
That's right.
And so it's just like all these things that go into that. And then now you're sitting here with 3 minutes from the coach. I still haven't listened to it. I won't listen to it. I don't need to listen to it.
Not now,
because
don't.
I know that that's just a plea, and I know that this team is not making the tournament, and I've known that since mid-February. You can make a run in the NCAA or the Big 12 tournament and win it and still make it. Sure you can. This team's not built to do that, and I knew that from the start. They get a nice win over Texas, but then get bombed by Iowa State the next night.
Right.
And so that's definitely your final nail there. Your absolute final nail is when teams like NC State are winning their conference tournament that shouldn't be in the tournament, and they're going to be there. And so all that goes into it, and so now you're stuck. Do you want to play in the NIT? Does this mean something to you? I could tell you right away that with the coaching staff that K-State has, they're not turning down an NIT bid.
Right.
If they've got kids that want to play and will play, they're not turning down an NIT bid. Tyler Perry has a chance to win 2 straight NIT championships if he can go through this tournament and win, right? That's not why you're playing the game. That's not why you're playing in this game. You want to be in the NCAA tournament. But if you have the right mix of players that actually care about playing and getting more games in and developing, especially for those younger, why do we play bowl games that don't mean anything? Because you can develop your kids
right.
and get them out there to play. Is my focus solely on how Kansas State does in the NIT this week? Absolutely not. I'm focused on the Kansas State women's team that's hosting the NCAA tournament later this week. And so it's like, That's not where my focus is at. Do I want K-State to perform well and win? Absolutely.
Sure.
Go out if you accept this bid, go out and play like you want to play. Because there's a lot of people now that you know that have not accepted this bid and they didn't care about it. That doesn't mean anything to them. Whether it's because people are leaving and there's going to be too many in the portal, they're not going to have enough kids to suit up. I don't know what the reasons are for everybody for not doing it. But for my team, they decided to do it, and I will support them. I'll watch all the games, probably start to finish. I want them to do well. Mm-hmm. Am I going to be, like, pumping my chest if they go through this whole thing and win it? No. Are they going to go through this whole thing and win it? No. I mean, if you really look at the whole thing that played into this and all the arguments that went into saying, oh, K-State should be in to the tournament because of this or this or this, they're respected so much that they're not even hosting their first round NIT game.
Right.
They have to go to Iowa to play in the NIT. That's where they are on a pecking order of should they be in the tournament or not. And this is,
but we have three unbelievable wins, Dusty.
And
out of 33.
And it's just like, if you just like read all the stuff that has happened and use your actual brain.
Yeah, I know. Be objective.
You can see
look at the facts.
That this was nowhere near a tournament team for the majority of the year. They started conference season 4-1, and that's the only time in the whole year that I was like, maybe they can do it if they build some momentum here. And then they started playing real teams in the conference.
We talked about the time.
They had a
soft,
very top-heavy schedule.
Soft schedule easy. Early in the Big 12.
And so they won games that they shouldn't have been going into overtime on and picking up wins at the end of non-con and then the start of the conference season. I mean, there's games that just absolutely should not have won that they pulled out and started 4-1, right? But these things are not – that was a very small stretch of this K-State season that you actually felt like maybe they could be a tournament team. For the most of it, non-con and conference season, it was like, this is not a tournament team.
Well, one of the other things, Jerome Tang said something at one point. He said, we have two players that would have started for us that didn't play this year. I'm like, well, one of them's fault is not, is you could argue it's your president's fault. How does the committee care? Your university determined to get rid of Nick Hontamu. So how
and,
is that?
And he did that to himself, too.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then Glover, that was an injury. Well, guess what? There's a lot of other teams that have Bryce Hopkins for Providence, for example.
Yes.
A lot of teams have injuries. I mean, Kansas has missed McCullough for 6 games, okay? But I get it. Glover didn't play at all this year, a whole season. But you're trying to tell the – you're insinuating the committee's supposed to project what you would have been with a guy that never played this year.
I mean,
there are teams that have
these guys
all the time.
I didn't listen to any of that. And the absurdity to think that just because you're in, that's why you're not going to get in is because you have injuries. There have been teams that have been left out of this tournament because they have injuries.
Right.
Because they're like, oh, or got a lower seed because they have injuries.
Right.
This isn't the same team that would have been here. And that's a detriment. That's not a help to your cause of being like, oh, we should be in because we had injuries. No, that means your team's not as good as it should be.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get a bid to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. There's different ways to look at it, no doubt.
That Michigan State thing, by the way, I'm like, why is Michigan State in this tournament just as a basketball fan? It has no correlation to K-State at all.
Yeah, right.
Like, I'm not saying K-State should be over them. I'm just saying Michigan State shouldn't be in the tournament. I just did want to say that.
No, because
you're talking about Michigan State, and I'm like, I would have more of an argument of just being as a basketball fan, being like, why does Tom Izzo get all this credit? Because his team wasn't good this year, and so why are they in this tournament? That has nothing to do with K-State. It has nothing to do with Oklahoma. It has nothing to do with...
No, it doesn't.
Indiana State. I don't care who it is that's complaining and shouldn't be complaining because they're obviously weren't one of the last four in.
Mm-hmm.
But it is like, why do they always get the credit? But they built that tradition, and if there's ever going to be a question between Michigan State and somebody other than
a blue blood,
another blue blood,
they're going to get the bid. They're going to get the benefit of doubt. You're right, and they did. And Michigan State, you could argue they're not in the tournament. You can certainly say Dayton shouldn't be a 7 seed. Boise State has no business being a 10 in a play-in. There's no doubt about that in my mind. I think you can argue Virginia's not in, although to me, Virginia's got a better case than Michigan State. But
I agree with that, too.
You know, I mean, so we could, you know, like we said, you can
break it down. But
what we're really eventually doing, especially with those last, like I said, I went over it on Friday. There was the 16 teams for 8 spots on the bubble. And I went through Lenardi's 16 before the conference title games on Saturday. And I said, ladies and gentlemen, you can take all of these 16 teams. You can write their name out on a piece of paper. You can throw them in a hat. I can have Dusty draw out 4 of those 16 names. He puts them out there, lays them out, and he can make a case that those 4 should be in the tournament. He can then throw those 4 away, pull 4 more out of the hat, and Dusty could say these 4 should be in the tournament. Conversely, you could do the exact same thing, Dusty. Give me the hat. I pull 4 names out. I look at them and I can make a case that every one of them shouldn't be in.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so what we're doing is we're just doing a beauty contest on who has less warts or more warts than the other. And is that any different in politics when we focus on, well, this candidate does this and he's horrible and she's horrible? Yeah, but what do you bring to the table? All you're telling me is about how bad that person is. But what are you bringing to the table? I will say the coaches, a little different than politicians, the coaches usually, for the most part, are pointing out their positives to get in instead of tearing down others.
Yeah.
But the point still is you've got to stump in one way or another to try to get in when all you earned, you didn't earn a spot in this tournament. You earned a spot on the bubble. That's the best you could do. And the fact that you put yourself on the bubble and you're in the bubble, why should I feel sorry for you because you didn't get in because of some kind of ranking?
Yeah.
You know, listen, you had everything. K-State we use as an example because we know them very well. You knew going into the KU game that that was a big, huge opportunity. And what did Jerome Tang say after the game when they got blown off the court in the second half? He was disappointed in their effort. How the hell do you not have good effort and against your rival on the road when your season's hanging in the balance? You lose to TCU at home, okay? Can't do that. You went to Cincinnati. You lost there. I mean, these are games you have to win. And when your coach after the game is saying he's disappointed in your effort after the KU game, that does not sound like a tournament team to me.
Road games where you get down by 15, 16, 17, and then you'll come back within two, and maybe you got lucky in one. But you didn't because you only won one road game, and it was pretty much
early in the year,
start to finish a lead at West Virginia, right?
Yeah.
There was no real – I didn't ever have any doubt they were going to win that game. But otherwise, the rest of your road games were a big deficit early. You fought back, and then you couldn't finish. And because you got the big deficit early and has to use so much energy to fight back, I get it. I understand why they didn't win those games.
Yeah.
You can't get down that big that early. That's what I'm saying.
But if you're a good team, you don't get behind early all that time.
No, you don't. You go out, you play. You don't lose at Oklahoma State. That was the big. That was the biggest one.
Yes.
That was when I definitely started turning that tide of this is not a tournament team. And then, again, then you turn around shortly after that and lose at home to TCU in a game you should have never lost. You should have never lost to Texas Tech early in the Big 12 season.
No.
And so, you know, that snowballed all the way after that. And everything on the road from that Texas Tech game was just like, it felt like there's no chance. And it just is what it is. The season didn't go like anybody wanted it to.
No.
I agree with Jerome Tang. This team is way different if Naquan Tomlin and Quez Glover are playing.
Absolutely.
But they weren't. And this was the hand you were dealt, and you had to deal with Tyler Perry playing point guard pretty much all year in a position he's not really a true point. And so if you had Quez Glover, that probably would have helped that. But you didn't. This is what it is. This is who your team is right now, and it is not anywhere near a tournament team.
You are what you are. KU gets Samford in the first round. Samford lost to Purdue by 53, but that was the first game of the year at Purdue. And KU fans every year freak out about whoever they get in the first round because that team's going to beat them. And I will say KU looks vulnerable. Samford shoots a lot of threes. If McCullough and Dickinson are 100%, could Kansas lose first round? Sure they could. They lost as a three to Bucknell. Okay. Back in the day, that wasn't. They've been upset in the tournament before. This team is vulnerable. We'll talk more about KU later on this week. In the NCAA women's tournament, both K-State and KU made the field. The Wildcats received terrific news last night as they're the 4 seed in regional number 2 in Albany. They'll host the first and second round games at Bramlage. That's huge. They only lost one game at Bramlage all year long. It was their final one of the year against Iowa State. K-State, the 4 seed at 25-7. They'll host the 13 seed Portland, who's 21-12. 3:30 tip time this Friday afternoon on ESPN News. So you want to play hooky from work, take off early?
I'm going to, by the way.
Okay, well, then there will be nobody here Friday afternoon. I was actually thinking about going to that, too.
Hey, that's fine. It's the NCAA tournament. Nothing's going on.
Whatever.
We can skip a market Friday afternoon.
The markets will understand. KU women are in a regional with number 3, Portland. They're going to start in L.A. See, I'm flying to L.A. to cover that one. You're going to cover K-State. I've never been to L.A. and probably don't want to be. But that'll be KU's the 8 seed. They'll take on the 9 seed Michigan. And KU's 19-12. That game will be this Saturday at 1 o'clock. Both the K-State and the KU games are on ESPN News if you want to watch it on television. Are the Chiefs about to trade L'Jarius Sneed? A lot of rumors out there. The Colts and Titans seem to be the most interested. There is rumors that the Titans, if they made the trade, they don't have a third-round pick, so it'd probably be a second-round pick, number 38 overall. I think that's intriguing if I'm a Chiefs if I'm Brett Veach, a 38th overall pick's not bad. Mm-hmm. High second round. The Colts, there's rumors they've offered a third. Somebody's reporting the other day that the Titans would give Snead 3 years, $61 million, and give up the second-round pick, but there's nothing that's beneficial at all. And the main sticking point seems to be Snead's asking price for a new contract. So here's the thing. The Chiefs have given L'Jarius Snead the freedom to go work out a trade like they did with Tyreek Hill. But if Snead asks for way too much money, the Chiefs are not going to trade him away for nothing. They want, I think, at least a second-round pick, if not a first. And if they don't get what they want, they're going to keep him. If L'Jarius Snead, if the Chiefs got a deal in place where they're going to get the right draft pick that they want, but L'Jarius Snead asks for way too much money, and the other team then balks and decides, okay, we're not doing this, that's on L'Jarius Snead. Mm-hmm. Because then L'Jarius Snead now is going to have to play on a one-year $19.8 million franchise tag, which you may say, oh, whoa, boo-hoo-hoo, he's got to play on a one-year $20 million deal. But he should not be a malcontent coming back to the Chiefs if that's what happens, because you're the one that had your price too high. You could have got your long-term deal, and you could have got, you know, even more financial security, more guaranteed money up front if your price wasn't too high. Now, these are reports. Maybe Snead is slightly higher than these teams want. Snead might come down to earth. They might compromise. Maybe the Titans or the Colts will say, listen, we won't. We're going to give you a second round. We'll give you a third round pick. And Snead works out stuff. And the Chiefs say, sorry, buddy, but we want a first round pick. Or the Chiefs are like, yes, baby. And Snead's like, sorry, but they won't sign me to the 3 years, $70 million I want. At the end of the day, Snead could very well still be a Chief. The Chief can handle the franchise tag financially. Restructure Mahomes' contract helps with that. So we'll continue to follow this. But right now, it looks like the Colts and the Titans remain the front runners to trade for L'Jarius Snead. We shall see how it all works out. Yeah. I almost think Snead's going to be back, but that's just me.
I have actually felt that the whole time, that they were actually going to tag him and keep him. Mm-hmm. But then all the trade stuff happened, and they said they granted him permission to seek a trade. So I was like, well, maybe he's not. But that was actually initially what might – and then this Chris Jones contract happens too, and that kind of changes maybe some of your thinking of actually getting that deal done. And so, but yeah, initially I really thought they were going to tag him and keep him on the team. So that could end up being what happens.
Well, I was saying this the other day, Brett Veach, in Veach I trust. Mm-hmm. I know in Veach you trust as well, that the Chiefs are playing this, I think, perfectly. And you'll get Hollywood Brown. They got him on a cheap deal, mm-hmm. like Juju Smith-Schuster. And people say it's an $11 million contract. It's not. It's a $7 million contract with incentives up to 11. So if he doesn't reach those incentives, they ain't going to pay. That's not a lot to pay for a one-year deal.
Yeah.
By the way, Scantling's getting $11 million. The Chiefs are getting Hollywood Brown cheaper than MBS. Think about that for mm-hmm. a second. And he fits this offense better, in my opinion. The key is to stay healthy. But when you look at L'Jarius Snead in the situation with the Chiefs, okay, the Chiefs, the same thing happened with Tyreek Hill. If the Chiefs didn't get enough back in draft capital, then they could have played hardball with Tyreek Hill. The only thing is they didn't tag him. Here they tag Snead. So with Snead, the Chiefs are sitting here going, listen, we tag him, and we'll be happy to keep him, and we can afford to keep him. So the Chiefs are not forced to trade him. But the Chiefs are also knowing that they'll have more flexibility if they could trade him, and they get draft capital, and they don't lock... They're not locked into $20 million next year on a franchise tag. So what they do is they say, L'Jarius and his agent, you feel free to work out a trade. And if you find the right match and we are okay with that match, then by all means, we will let you go get your money, because we can't give you a long-term deal right now. You go get your deal. We get what we want out of the equation. But the great thing about this is the Chiefs have all the leverage in the world. They do not have to trade. It's like I said this the other day. It's like asking a lot for your house, but you don't really have to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
You can wait it out. And if somebody doesn't give you what you want, you just say, you know what? I'll just keep my house.
Yep.
And if somebody gives you your magic number, you said, all right, we're downsizing, honey. We're moving to a smaller house because we just sold this one. Whereas when you need to move, you got a new job somewhere, by golly, we got to hurry. We got to sell this house so we can get a house in another town. You have less leverage. Okay, so if the Chiefs didn't have any money freed up to sign L'Jarius Snead, or the tag was going to really cause problems for them, then yeah, then you know what would happen? Teams wouldn't offer quite as much.
Mm-hmm.
But they know if they really, really covet L'Jarius Snead, probably, and this is based on what I know and people I've talked to, it's a two round. It's a second round pick. The Chiefs want at minimum a second round pick.
Oh yeah.
I mean, if they get a first round pick, they'll do it so fast your head will
spin. Oh yeah.
Sure. But if they can get a second round pick, I don't know if third round is good enough. From what I'm hearing, it's not. If they can get a second round,
wouldn't be
round,
good enough for me. I know that.
I agree. If you can get a high to mid second round pick or a first round pick, I think boom, the Chiefs will do it. Then the question is Snead working out the long term deal with all the guaranteed money, signing bonus money, blah blah blah, and so forth and so on. But the point of the story is the Chiefs can go either way here. If it doesn't work out and Snead can't work out a trade, the Chiefs still have all their draft picks. Okay, they have a all pro, unbelievable defensive back for a franchise tag of $20 million to go get a three-peat. If they trade him, they're going to get a first or second round pick, because I think that's the only way the trade's going to happen. Mm-hmm. They save themselves $20 million on the cap next year and gives them more flexibility to do some other things they want to do. And they have other guys that can slide in and take over Snead's spot. Will they be as good as Snead? Maybe not, but they can make other parts of their team better, perhaps, to compensate for Snead's absence. And they do have an all-pro corner in Trent McDuffie, by the way. And Jalen Watson has the same body type as Legarius Snead. He could be the guy that slides into that position that Snead had last year. So, to me, it's a win-win for the Chiefs. They have nothing to lose by letting him explore a trade. Mm-hmm. And if they make it, it's going to be on their terms, not on the other team's terms, because they have all this stuff going against them. The Chiefs have the leverage in this situation because of, obviously, a franchise tag, but also because they've worked out, the gurus financially for the Chiefs have worked all this out to where, believe it or not, we signed Chris Jones to the deal, and we can keep Legarius Snead on a one-year deal if we need to. Would we prefer to move him and have more flexibility? Yes. Do we have to? No.
For sure. I mean, all of that I agree with. And the whole thing, I think, is a good look to let the guy explore, right?
You're giving him opportunity.
He's got it, mm-hmm. and they're not saying, hey, we don't want you to have an opportunity to play in this league, right?
Saying you're playing under the tag, but you have no chance of getting an extension.
It's tag or else, right. You know? Like, there's, but because in the history of the NFL, there has been a lot of that, right? Yes. It's tag or you don't play. And so,
and players usually aren't very happy.
Yeah,
they can be exactly a problem in the locker room.
And so now you've given him the opportunity here to say it's tag, but if somebody that we can find a trading partner with wants you, we'll go ahead and let you get your money right away.
Yeah.
You're going to get your money right away if you play on this tag right here. It's only going to be a short-term right-away money situation. But, yeah, I mean, I think their plan is perfect, and I think it's just another example of why Brett Veach is one of the best in the game at doing what he's doing. Is I think he does make sure that everything – is copacetic on each end, right? Mm-hmm. Like, everybody understands what the situation is and where they're at. And even when Chris Jones held out, I don't think there was like this non-communication between the two, right? No. In fact, both of them said they were in constant communication. And so even if things on the surface don't look like they're going right for the Chiefs, they probably are. And it's just a matter of time of working everything out the right way and doing it in the right way. And I think that's something that is probably built through Andy Reid and then passed down to Brett Veach from working together for so long. And then now Brett Veach just rolling with that and doing his own thing and understanding how to work this system and knowing all the ins and outs of it after being in it for so long.
Yeah.
And again, I like everything they're doing here.
In Veach, we trust. And finally, the Royals spring training update. Cole Reagans is going to get the opening day start late March. I think March 28th, the season opener. That's coming up pretty soon. Well, we got 10 days. Cole Reagans was awesome second half after they traded and got him from the Rangers in exchange for Aroldis Chapman. And the Royals did lose yesterday 6-4 in spring training. Not that that's a big deal, but the opening series will start on March the 28th and against the Twinkies. And it will be Cole Reagans as a starter instead of Zach Greinke. And no offense to Zach Greinke, but this is a major step up in opening day starter. Zach Greinke wasn't... You know, when Zach Greinke was 26, yes, perfect. But Greinke was 38 or 39 last year. And so Cole Reagan's going to be their starter opening day. He's super excited about it. Bobby Witt Jr. had a good game yesterday, I think it was, or over the weekend. 3 hits, 2 RBIs. Of course, he's signed long term. So there's reason to be optimistic about the Royals. And speaking of that, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. Go ahead and celebrate Cinco de Mayo with us as we go to Kansas City. We'll have a great time. The 5th of May. Did you know the Cinco de Mayo is on the 5th of May this year? I play that joke every single year. Some newspaper person said Cinco de Mayo this year is on the 5th of May. Yeah, it always is. Do you know what Cinco de Mayo means? Anywho, on Cinco de Mayo, or May the 5th, we will be taking a lot of Royals fans. If you want to go, we still have some seats available. Call 545-3220 or you can sign up at various locations across North Central Kansas as we will see the Royals, the boys in blue, against the defending World Series champion Texas Rangers. It's going to be a matchup of the defending World Series champion Rangers and the future World Series champion Kansas City Royals. Yeah,
absolutely.
Mark it down, take it to the bank. You probably shouldn't do that. But anyway, that is the matchup on May the 5th. So you'd like to go, call us 545-3220. I'm glad you had a good time on your trip.
Yes.
My trip was I don't, what did I do? Oh, yeah. We went to Manhattan. We ate on the way to Topeka, then went to a memorial service of a friend of my wife's. And that's what we did for spring break. The Gerstners. And then we had a green beer yesterday at the house. Because nobody parties it up on spring break better than the Gerstners.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.